Yeah, it's impressive. I mean, he's had a great year. I mean, he's so competitive for the ball, his route running, the way that he plays on Sundays. He's a very tough cover. You know, even when he's doubled, we've still thrown him the ball. He's come up with some huge plays for us, and it's really good. The touchdowns are obviously, an added bonus for him. He's done a great job, whether it's on, deep balls or red area or things like that. So he's been a big weapon for us, obviously.
Tom Herman will join us 1 hour from now on Mad Radio. Sunday, you and I have got the pregame show starting at 9 a.m. in advance of the Texans and Jaguars. I know the season from a playoff and all that possibility standpoint is over. We all know that, but they do have three games to go. Bill Bardwell for ESPN.com is an interesting writer to look at because he takes an in-depth look at some of the things going on in the NFL, and he basically went through a hypothetical on ESPN.com yesterday about, okay, let's take all the coaches in the NFL who may or not be fired or leave for whatever reason and just rank the possible open head coaching jobs in the NFL.
Yep.
He had the Texans ranked first in terms of how good the job is. He went like this: Indianapolis 5, Giants 4, Bears 3, Browns 2, and the Texans number 1. And the main reason why they're the best job, hypothetically, is, of course, Deshaun Watson. He basically said, if you look at it, there have not been too many recent scenarios in the NFL in which a job like this, with a quarterback this young and this good, has been available. I mean, Jack Del Rio took over in Oakland, but when he took over, Derek Carr wasn't considered as good as he was, let's say, last year when he was in the running for MVP. So it's a pretty unique situation.
Right, and that becomes the question is, okay, what else? Because at first blush, it doesn't seem right. I don't know where I would have put the Browns. The Browns, in terms of everything on the football field, including the draft picks that they have, like all the extreme football-related stuff, you'd look at that, and if you didn't know anything about the history of the Browns, you'd say, well, hell yeah, I'm taking that. It's because look at the future. I can build, it doesn't have a quarterback yet, but we've got all kinds of cap space.
Ton of picks.
We've got like six picks in the first three rounds? It's a ridiculous number of picks. And they've actually, on paper, the offensive line, I think they're better than they're performing this year. I think you can put it on a whole lot of other factors where that offensive line doesn't look as good as they probably should. They've got a good run defense. They've got good young players on defense. The problem is that I don't know how long John Dorsey, the GM, is actually going to be there if he does fire Hugh Jackson. He, by the way, kind of gave Hugh Jackson a couple positive comments the other day.
Well, he said they have no players.
As he torched, he torched the outgoing staff.
Yes.
He said these guys weren't drafting guys that would
fit
you. Yeah, real players. Which, by the way, if you're John Dorsey, you've been a GM for all of, 3-4 years with the Kansas City Chiefs.
But you know what being a GM is like.
You know what being a GM is like, but you come in and it's one thing to insult the outgoing staff or criticize the outgoing staff. I wouldn't do that personally, but fine, whatever. You want to speak honestly and truthfully and everything. It's like, what are you saying, though, to Myles Garrett? Like, what are you saying he's obviously not talking about Myles Garrett, but he's talking about Myles Garrett's buddies and everybody else that was brought in by that staff.
I mean, if you're anybody who's drafted by Cleveland in the last 2 years, you'd be thinking, is he talking about me?
Yeah, which I guess maybe that's good. Maybe it's putting him on blast, but it's also, it's kind of a public insult.
Well,
it's a public insult, but it doesn't need to be. You can send messages to your players without basically saying, hey, everybody that they drafted here is trash in the last couple of years. I just don't get where the upside of it is.
It's also giving your coach a pass, too, by the way, for winning only one game and none on Sundays. As far as this goes, listen, even with all the organizational issues, the Texans are a good job because of the quarterback situation, if the job hypothetically came available. I'm a little surprised that Barnwell had the Colts as the number 5 job, because if it was me, I would much rather have Indianapolis than the Chicago Bears. I have no idea what Mitch Trubisky is going to be as a quarterback.
Right. Would you trust more the development of Mitch Trubisky or Andrew Luck's labrum? And I also feel
labrum.
And honestly, too, if I'm an offensive-minded coach and I got a swagger about me, I think that I'm gonna come in and I'm going to do some things for Andrew Luck to keep him healthy that these other coaches haven't been able to do. Is it rational to think that way? Perhaps not, but that's the feeling you have. If you're cocky enough and confident enough to be a head coach in the NFL, then you probably feel that way, and it's awful appetizing to work with Andrew Luck. But I do think if you look at Indianapolis, if you go position group by position group, It is true. You look at the Texans right now, and barring even without injury, there are fewer problem position groups than there are on these other teams. Like, offensive line is a problem, and it's a big problem. You can fix offensive line without having a single stud on your offensive line.
You don't need a star.
It's the old Bill James theory that, like, sometimes just having all average players puts you way ahead above everybody else.
Oh, dear. I mean, if you gave me all average for next season, I would take it in a heartbeat.
Like, go ahead and overpay for average in free agency. Heavily draft offensive line. And then all of a sudden, one huge headache of a position group might not have to be a huge headache of a position group. But the big question, though, is, okay, your defensive backfield is a big headache right now, and there's uncertainty as to what you're going to do with Jonathan Joseph. Is Kevin Johnson ever actually going to be a good football player? Where is Kareem Jackson at his point in his career? The safety position is a mess. Like, you've got, those are five positions right there, none of which are set in stone, and it's kind of a big deal. Like, I'm going in, I feel great about the quarterback, and it's harder to find a good quarterback than it is to find a good defensive backfield, but you've just got to, I don't know how you're going to address that defensive backfield over the next couple of years.
If I'm a potential head coach, obviously the possibility of working with Deshaun Watson is a very appetizing one. But what am I thinking about working for Rick Smith or an organization that has Rick Smith as a GM? That has to be a negative.
And whatever the rumors are, because whatever the rumors are right now that actually make it to the press or get reported, the rumors are always far greater within the league itself and within league circles and with conversations guys have with each other. So who knows? I mean, that's a big thing that we'll never actually know.
Do I want to work, if I'm an NFL head coaching candidate, do I want to work for an organization, for a GM who I think is never going to get fired, who's not even that good to begin with?
Mm-hmm.
And when I say not even that good, that's not like a personal opinion. That,
no, you're not saying he's awful. You're not saying he's great. It's just there's no track record of extreme success for Rick Smith.
Rick Smith, unlike the GMs in this town or the GMs who stay around a while in the NFL, has never built a roster that went to a conference championship game or a Super Bowl by definition. Usually the guys who stay around as long as Rick has, they've gotten to that level. He has not.
You'd be going into a situation where you know if it doesn't work out, the blame will be squarely on your shoulders.
Yes.
Which, again, I don't think that's as much of an impediment as we might think, because whoever takes the job expects to do really well. Every guy that takes the job expects to win the Super Bowl.
I have a question.
So it's not as simple as like he's not going into a thing like, well, boy, I might really be bad at this job.
Do you you know how whenever you have an interview, one of the key things going in is that little section at the end where you have to ask them questions?
Uh-huh.
If you were interviewing as a head coach for the Texans head coaching job, could you, in that little section of the interview, ask McNair about Rick Smith?
I think you definitely would.
What
I
would
think it would come up before that. I would want to know exactly what the dynamic is. What's that?
Can you ask him why he's kept him so long, or is that's too aggressive for a head coaching
guy? How would you tactfully do it?
How do you tactfully do that?
Yeah.
I guess, could you say, if we struggle, how much of the blame is going to go on me versus the GM? Because the GM has been around for now three head coaches.
I'll tell you this, knowing what I know of billionaires, which I know, I'm just joking.
You know,
I know a little bit. I will say this. Like, most people in those positions aren't offended by bluntness or hard questions. Like, a lot of times they got to where they are because they're willing to have the hard conversations.
Okay.
They're willing to take input or hear things that they don't want to hear. Sometimes they're tyrants and they'll fire a guy for it. But they want to have that feedback. So I think if anything, that actually might be something that they would respect. I remember, you know why Lane Kiffin, this was told to me by one coach, a coach that I used to play for. So this is we're playing a telephone game here. I'm sure I've got some details wrong. But it was told to me that part of the reason that Lane Kiffin got the job in Oakland was that he wasn't afraid to push back against Al Davis in the interviews.
I could see Al liking that.
That he basically was like saying, like, no, Al, I think it's like this. And it's this Lane Kiffin, this cocky young, what, like 32, 33-year-old at the time.
He liked
and
that.
Al Davis actually liked that. Now, Al Davis doesn't represent all NFL owners, but there's something to be said for being brash, I suppose.